everybody, and welcome to episode 95 of the GVG Cast. Happy Friday. I am your host for today, Ash Paulston. I'm joined by a full panel of my good friends and GVG partners. We've got Derek Bittner, we've got Daniel Alba, and we've got Steve Bowling. I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. How's it going, my friends?
Don't ask me.
I was waiting for everybody else.
It's a good week. I'm finally digging my way out of day job hell. I'm silent. They're saying I'm. Can you all hear me? Chat.
Am I muted? Swear. Hold on.
I'm not running the stream this time. I'm running it.
I'm checking.
They're saying they can hear me. So okay. I don't know why someone said silent, Steve. All right, sorry guys.
Oh, it's probably because you didn't talk right away.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it's a good week, man. Y'all scared me.
Anyway, yeah,
I'm having PTSD from all the times I've muted everyone. I day job has been miserable lately, so I've been digging my way out of that, which is why you've only seen me in commercials on the channel, and I got a few more for you until I'm off of commercial duty. But I'm excited to get back to making regular videos. I've been playing Rebirth. I've been playing. Oh God, I played the Princess Peach demo. I'm sure we're going to talk about all that later. Obvious tragic news aside, it's been a pretty good week.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, and we'll be getting into all that, of course, pretty soon. Daniel, how have you been this week, man?
Been doing okay. I finished Persona 3 Reload on the same day that the game canonically finishes in-game. That was a trip. March 5th.
Why am I not surprised?
That was weird. I didn't realize until I realized, it's the last day of the game, and it is also today, graduation day. That was fun. And Atlas can't let me rest because I just finished it, and then they announced, obviously everyone saw already, Episode Aegis, which is formerly called The Answer. It was called Episode Aegis in Japan, so they're going with that name now. And I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing this already. We're waiting for September to get the... I like how they announced Wave 3 first, and then Wave 1 and 2 are just like, you know, costumes and music.
I mean...
You want to see Aegis first, so...
Let's be honest. As far as expansion passes go, those first two waves suck.
It's just like, we got to call
something
together.
Standard DLC.
Daniel, it's not lost on me that you said, I guess we're doing this first. I know that was on purpose. I know you said that on purpose. I liked it.
I can't get anything past Ash ever.
Of course not. No, man. Derek, how about you, man? How's it going?
Doing all right. I've been, last two weekends, I'm still doing that Yakuza 0 subathon, believe it or not.
I love it.
Just
wow. So generous.
Just to get, people have been incredibly generous. It is, overwhelming, in that way. But to just break it down, Saturday I streamed from 10 till 4:30 a.m. 10 a.m. to 4:30 a.m. that night. Sunday I came back at, I was like, chat was basically like, you got to go to bed, go to sleep. So I went to sleep and, came back and, I started back up at noon, went till midnight. So there was another 12 hours and then was like, okay, I can't go into Monday. So we have to wait till the next weekend. I got kids and stuff happening. So the following weekend, I started at 10:30, went till midnight on Saturday, Sunday, started at 10:30, went till 12:30. And in all that time, I have completed about 75% of the sub stories in the game. And I'm on chapter 8 or 9. I can't fully remember. I am so close. Like I am somewhat far into the game, but also like, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not really that far. Like I still have half the game to go, but because I've almost finished all the sub stories, like it's going to be just a straight shot once I get back to it. But unfortunately after that, I got sick. I was not feeling well. I got just these awful chills and the stuffy nose that I'm finally today over. Good to go to complete the 5.5 hours that are remaining that I have, to do tomorrow. And who knows if that'll keep going on. Starting at 10 over my own personal channel. Otherwise, like Steve, been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, checked out the Princess Peach demo. and just trying to work as much as I can on my videos. I have a script in the works and I'm editing the other. So just trying to get all that done. But unfortunately, nice. Being sick held me up. So that sucked.
Well, dude, you and me both. Those of you who watch every week will remember I was not on the show last week. It's been a bit of a rough patch for me this past couple of weeks because I, too, got sick. I also had a mystery allergic reaction on top of me, and I mentioned this before, taking a pretty bad fall yet again somehow. This is mere weeks after I took a bad fall at MAGFest. I took another fall and messed up my my left torso rib cage, and it's just been hard to move around. Even sitting at my desk has been really painful, but I'm finally on the up and up. I'm finally healing. And so I'm doing a little bit better. But thankfully Daniel and our good pal Brandon they forced me to rest last week. I was like, I think I'm feeling good enough, guys, as long as one of you hosts. And he's like, nope, we're going live. Fuck you, bye. And I appreciate that. You made me rest, which I really appreciate. But I am feeling a little bit better. Still a little sore, but definitely on the up and up. Like all of you, I have been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I can't believe I've been playing it for a week now, and I still can't believe this game exists in the form that it does, at the scale that it does. What a game! And we'll be talking about that, of course. No spoilers for anybody out there. I'm still early on in the game myself, so certainly no spoilers. And I did play the Princess Peach Showtime demo earlier today, so we could talk about it right here on this very show. But before we get into that too much, I do want to thank Fangs the Wolf, or I should say Fangs Tail Wolf, for gifting 5 tier 1 subs to our community. Really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And also, we got a first-time chat from Hobo Phoenix 24. First time being here for a live. I'm excited. And I just got to say, I love that name because my wife and I are playing through Ace Attorney 4 right now in the Apollo Justice Collection. And so that name, I see it, I hear it, and I love it. It's so good.
They also subscribed with their, you chose us for their Prime subscription. So that's also very thankful.
Oh, I see that.
And Skolchen. With 100 bits as well, saying greetings from Kettleman City, California. Currently on the road with a road trip. It's so cool here, and better than in Germany, where I usually live. So wow, visiting from Germany all the way in California, that's a heck of a trip.
Wow. Well,
if you make your way all the way up to Washington, hit me up. Although you have Ash and Daniel to get through.
Germans know how to party, right?
Exactly.
You have to get through us first before you can see Steve. It sounds like a challenge.
I'm the final boss of West Coast GVG.
And Star Wolf Zero, I won't get into it too much here, but long story short, you can find the reason that we moved the show over to Twitch on a YouTube community post that I made a couple of weeks ago. So go on to our YouTube community page if you want to know the full reason. But basically, it is for the overall health of our YouTube channel that we moved the show over to Twitch. We understand it's not a popular decision for everybody, and we apologize for that. But the good news is, if you subscribe to Good VODs Gaming on YouTube, that's our alternate channel, we put the VODs up of every GVG cast there up after the fact. So if you don't love watching here live on Twitch, we understand, but the VODs are available after each live show every week. But basically, it's because of the algorithm, and you can find more about that in our YouTube community post that I just mentioned. But really quickly, we do have some patron birthday shout-outs for the past couple of weeks. Happy birthday to Mach5 Mike, who celebrated their birthday on Wednesday, February 28th. Happy birthday to FDN, who celebrated theirs also on Wednesday the 28th. Juan Delgado, earlier this month, thank you so much. I believe it was a week ago today, so March 1st. GCM of Chaos, also on March 1st. And Bisonhower, who celebrates their birthday in a couple of days on Sunday, March 10th. And then finally, normally we keep it just to our patrons and community members, but this one was really special. Fiat's son was born today, so congratulations on the birth of your son, Fiat. And happy first
birthday. It's
the
best kind of birthday.
Happy zeroth birthday to your son. Zeroth, so it was a special occasion. So happy
birthday to everyone.
Hearts math there.
Yeah, exactly. So good. All around. Unfortunately, we're going to talk a little bit more about this later in the show, but I do, of course, want to have a brief moment of silence for the one and only Akira Toriyama, who sadly passed away earlier this week at the way too young age of 68. So, of course, we're going to talk more about that, but rest in peace, Akira Toriyama, and our thoughts go out to you and your loved ones during this very difficult time. And I think that's actually just oh, nice, Derek. I think that's probably as good a time as any to kind of go right into it. And let's talk about the impact that the one and only Akira Toriyama has had on all of us, on video games in general. I know he's been a major fixture in all of our lives, given that we're all, obviously, we do. We love video games. We love anime. And Steve, I want to start with you, man, because I know, you know, obviously you and I share a favorite game of all time in Chrono Trigger, but I also know that you are a massive Dragon Ball Z fan, Dragon Ball, potentially general fan. And so yours was actually the first post I saw on Twitter about this, how you were just like, oh man, this is really, really rough. And how are you feeling about this? And tell me a little bit about how Akira Toriyama has influenced your life and all the media you've consumed over the years.
Yeah, well, first off, credit where it's due. I heard from Derek, who posted it in our Discord.
Oh, that's right, Derek did. But yeah,
I was in the middle of playing games with my best friend, and ironically, talking to my brother on FaceTime, who was in Japan doing some shopping for me.
Oh, no.
when I got the news, and so you know, I told my brother, I was like, "You probably want to sit down before I tell you this," you know, but Dragon Ball, like it is for so many people, is a huge part of why I am who I am today. I grew up watching Dragon Ball Z and the original Dragon Ball as a kid on Fox, like, you know, syndicated TV. I would get up at 4:30 in the morning to watch Sailor Moon followed by Dragon Ball, and then get ready for school. And, you know, I think every 90s kid had some level of interaction with Dragon Ball. Like there was nobody, you know, even today, there's nobody who doesn't know who Goku is, whether you're into anime or not, whether you're, you know, into shonen stuff, everybody knows who Goku is. You know, we're talking about a character so popular that it's the one character that Sakurai specifically had to deconfirm for Smash. Like, you know, he had to be like, I only do video game characters. I'm not putting Goku in Smash. But, you know, I grew up watching Dragon Ball. I've read the whole manga probably dozens of times at this point. Like, it is kind of a go-to for me, and it definitely influenced my love of games, my love of Japanese culture, my love of anime. You know, I just... this man's work has had such an impact on my life and the lives of millions of other people all over the world, that it's just kind of, it's shocking. It's shocking to know that he's gone, you know, and it puts a lot of things in perspective for me. Like Akira Toriyama was younger than my dad, you know, that's terrifying. You know, he is certainly gone too soon. You know, I know Brandon is a huge Naruto fan as well as a huge Dragon Ball fan. He and I have bonded over our shared love of those two manga. And, you know, Akira Toriyama is also friends with Masashi Kishimoto, who created Naruto. He's friends with Eiichiro Oda, who created One Piece. And reading their tributes to him was just gut-wrenching. Like, I believe it was Oda who was talking about how he remembers the first time Akira Toriyama referred to him by name and called him a friend, and how that felt like an achievement in his own life. We're talking about the guy who made the currently most popular anime and manga of all time, you know, and right. Talking about how just recognition from Akira Toriyama, you know, was one of his crowning achievements in his life.
You ask any manga creator over there about his opinions right now, and they all refer to him as a god. That's how much respect he had. And the fact that it's such a worldwide recognition. Like, there is not a single part of this world that does not recognize Goku. And to have a character just pierce the common census like that is difficult to do. And the fact that he managed to do it with this story that started off as just a silly gag manga that's based off the, you know, Journey to the West, very loosely with his own silly humor. Yeah.
Well, speaking of it, when I did a, you know, kind of a tribute tweet as well last night, And the one and only Mark Hamill replied to it with a broken heart emoji. And it's like, that's like Luke Skywalker is a big fan of this, of Toriyama. It's like he really was that ubiquitous. They're everybody. It doesn't matter who or where you are, knew about his work. And that it just goes to show how many people he touched with his work. And Daniel, we haven't heard from you yet. I want to hear your thoughts, man. What is your history with you know, Toriyama's work? And you know, did you watch a lot of Dragon Ball, or you know, early? I want to say growing up, because I know you're younger than all of us. But yeah,
that young. Yeah, when I was it was in elementary school that I was introduced, because I was one of those kids that watched Toonami very, very often. Mm-hmm. After school, it was on for 2 hours, and it got so big that it turned to 3 hours, and that was awesome. And there was, I got shows like, it's what introduced me to anime, shows like Sailor Moon. I watched Transformers Armada, Yu Yu Hakusho, and then obviously one of the ones was Dragon Ball Z. And that's pretty much how I experienced the entire series, like the really early, like the early dub, way back then. And that changes you, man. The way that they articulate fighting scenes, I've never seen anything like that. And I didn't know cartoons could be like that way back then. And it just captured me from the moment that I started watching it. And I know that eventually Toonami also showed the original Dragon Ball as well. So I was like seeing the whole thing from the original Dragon Ball all the way through to the Buu saga. And those days of like Dragon Ball GT, even way back then too. Yeah, it was such a major part, and you see that influence in culture and media everywhere. It's a household name, and that bled into other things that I got interested in too, because I feel like Dragon Quest VIII is the one I resonate with the most, and that was the first Dragon Quest I ever played on the PS2, because I recognized the art style. It was a JRPG. I was like, oh, this is something I definitely want to try. I didn't have a Super Nintendo, so I didn't play Chrono Trigger until it came out on the DS. The DS version was the first time I played it as well, around the same time. And so, yeah, they just... The character designs are so amazingly recognizable for pretty much anything that he's conjured up. All the monsters in Dragon Quest, like, they're so instantly recognizable. A little drop, a slime, two little eyes and a silly face, that's one of the most iconic creatures in any kind of media, to the point where slimes are just in so many different games as like, oh, the first monster that you meet. And that's partially inspired because of Toriyama's work. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, man, because I see so many posts on Twitter, especially this series, Dragon Ball especially, it is so popular in certain parts of the world, like Mexico is crazy for Dragon Ball. You probably seen some of these on Twitter. Like, there were several cities in Mexico would have massive watch parties of hundreds of people watching the episodes on a huge projector or something, like it's like it's the Super Bowl. And it's just incredible to see that energy, and you don't get that with any other series that I can think of, any other like animation or whatever. Dragon Ball carried something special, and it's nothing that any series I can see replicating in any capacity.
Some of the best videos out there are those Mexico watches the finale of Dragon Ball Super. That's great stuff. But go ahead, Steve. Yep. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I was gonna say, I mean, it's really hard to overstate Dragon Ball, and of course Akira Toriyama's continued influence. You know, when that episode Derek's referring to with the Mexico watch video, that episode single-handedly took down Crunchyroll and Twitter like at the same time. When that episode premiered, the internet was essentially broken. Like, you could not, if you wanted to talk about that episode, you had to wait for like a whole day to be able to get online and talk about it, because social media was just wrecked from so many people sharing their enthusiasm for this. You know, one of the things that really hit me hard right before we went live, I decided to log into Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, and it was very sad. Like, for the first time in years, I had a hard time logging into that game. Like, there were so many people on it that I had difficulty getting in. And when I did get in, you know, Xenoverse 2 doesn't have voice chat, it's a very old game. It doesn't have, you know, the ability to just free type, but people were just spamming like auto chats of like thank you and goodbye. And you know, there were loads of characters dressed up as Goku, lots of people, you know, sending Toriyama their energy. It was heartbreaking to see like just a bunch of Dragon Ball fans mourning together in whatever way they could. And you know, I honestly got a little choked up. It was hard for me to think about the fact that, you know, in some way, you know, and there's still lots of Dragon Ball coming, but in some way our adventures with these characters are over now. And that sucks. I mean, like with, you know, Kishimoto, he got to end Naruto the way he wanted to. But Toriyama had returned and was doing a lot of work with Dragon Ball. And I don't know what that means for the future of the series, but I'm sad that he didn't get to end it in whatever way he had planned.
He did create a rough timeline for how, for Xenoverse and Dragon Ball Online. So there is a rough timeline of how things play out. And I know in terms of Super and Toyotaro and the movies, he'd basically give rough outlines for it and then they'd fill in the blanks. So I don't know how much he offered up in terms of that, but I expect it to continue. And who knows what the state of that new show that's coming, the one where they get transformed into kids, because I got no reference point for that one. Related to Xenoverse, I saw the Dragon Quest X has just a similar sort of thing in Japan. They're having a lot of tributes and whatnot in that game since it's an MMO. And I mean, the man was just fully associated with Dragon Quest. Like, how do I, the way to do it to be part of not only one of the biggest, be part of the biggest manga anime in the world, but then the biggest video game series in Japan. And I love this thing where he has his own. Oh shoot, I opened to the wrong page. I'm sorry. Here it is. Himself dressed up. That's his self-portrait dressed up as the hero. And you gotta love it. Oh, and that's so cool.
His avatar.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the original, I have it in my Dragon Quest 1 video that's on the channel. But it did. There's the what Yuji Horii offered up to Toriyama, like, okay, here's our slime, and it really is just a puddle. And Toriyama's just like, yeah, we're gonna make it this teardrop looking thing, and just change the face of it. And the other thing I discovered today, and that I've worked into my script for Dragon Quest II, that I did not realize at all until people were again sharing all these stories about Toriyama. The design of orcs in Japan are directly related to him, because up to a certain point, you might notice orcs are kind of green, humanoid, very much based on D&D and Lord of the Rings type ideas in the West, at least. But you know, that's how orcs tend to be pigs in Western media. Like, take moblins going from dog-like creatures to pig-like creatures. Or even how the orcs in Final Fantasy 16 right now have those pig-like elements. It's because of Toriyama. He had the random decision in Dragon Quest II to take the orc and give it a boar design. Just one simple decision changed the course of fantasy in Japan.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, his influence really cannot be overstated. And to piggyback off something you said, Steve, in terms of being hit really hard by something, I retweeted a tweet by our good friend Rebecca Stone, and she posted a screenshot of the developer room ending of Chrono Trigger, where Toriyama is an NPC in the game that you can talk to, and he shouts out his kids. And when I saw that I was like, oh, God. I was like, oh, man, that hit me hard. And I mean, I was also, you know, Toonami was such a huge part of my adolescence. And I watched Dragon Ball Z religiously for a period of my life, basically from the beginning of Z all the way up through the Buu saga, or up to the Buu saga. And that was such a big fixture in my life for so long. And then, of course, like Steve, my favorite game of all time is Chrono Trigger. And I mean, it has to be said, Chrono Trigger would not be what it is without Toriyama's designs. Like, that is such a huge part of the DNA of what Chrono Trigger is and who those characters are. And what that world is. And I mean, that Chrono Trigger has had such a tremendous, I can't even overstate how huge an impact it's had on my life. And a big part of that is the life he breathed into that world and those characters. I mean, to this day, Luca is still, she's like in my top three favorite characters of all time. I love that character. And so much of that is the charm that Toriyama breathed into her and that entire world. And just talk about an absolute legend. And it definitely, I just wasn't, I mean, you never expect something like this when you hear about the death of someone who's been so influential, not only in your own life, but so many people's lives. And when I had seen that right before you posted it, Derek, in our partner chat, and I was like, I had to take a breath. I was like, whoa, like it wasn't really since, I think, the death of Iwata that I was like taken aback like that, because I was like, whoa, this is someone who's had such a major influence on my life, an impact on my life. And it's really been heartwarming to see so many people come together to pay tribute to someone who has been so incredibly special. And I see that Brandon is in our chat. Welcome, Brandon. Wish you could have been here with us today, man. I know how hardcore you are about Dragon Ball as well. I'm hopefully we're doing everything that you would have said justice, man. And thank you for being here. Is there anything else you guys wanna say or kind of wax poetic about before we talk about some other stuff?
I mean, we obviously know his involvement in Dragon Quest, his involvement in Chrono Trigger. Yeah. He did work, did some other stuff for other video games. Most notably, the Tobol series. He did the character designs for one and two, and right. Of course, Blue Dragon.
Blue Dragon.
Yep. Yeah. And he'd have
yeah. Dragon Quest.
Yeah, he'd have little things like he stayed friends with Sakaguchi for a while as well after Chrono Trigger, because you know he worked with him with Blue Dragon, and then for Fantasian, I didn't even realize this. I was just on the Wikipedia. One of the dioramas used for that game that's on Apple Arcade was designed by Toriyama.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Also, as Mido Game reminds us in our chat, Sandland is coming up, and he had huge involvement in that, and that's going to hit differently now when that comes.
Well, Sandland is based on one of his manga,
right?
So Sandland was what he did after Dragon Ball.
Okay, then that's going to hit completely differently now, and be that much more special, I guess.
Yeah, I know Daniel was trying to get something out too.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, man. I didn't realize.
You covered it with Sandland. I was going to say that Toriyama was still working. He was still doing lot of work. He was working. I mean, Dragon Quest 3 HD 2D is still going to come out. Dragon Quest 12, whatever that's going to look like whenever that reemerges again. He was working on Sandland, which was now that's it's yeah. Well, you already mentioned it, but yeah, it's different now. So, I don't know. It's rough because there's just so many different facets of media that he was involved in, and that's going to continue to be influenced by the impact that he made on the entertainment industry in this way.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would say the only thing that I really have left to add is that I'd just like to say thank you to Toriyama for all that he gave the world. I mean, it sounds corny, but like I'm very grateful that I've gotten to meet, you know, two out of my big three heroes. I got to meet, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto, and in the one chance encounter I had with him, I thanked him for making Mario, and I got to meet Eiji Aonuma and thank him in person for his work on Zelda. And I always kind of dreamed that someday I'd get to meet Akira Toriyama and thank him for Dragon Ball. And I'm really fucking gutted that I'll never have that opportunity to thank him to his face for, you know, all he gave us. But I mean, at least I could say it here online, you know, for whoever's watching. Thank you, Toriyama, for Chrono Trigger, for Dragon Ball, for everything. You know, they changed my life. I wouldn't probably be doing this if I hadn't seen those episodes of Dragon Ball in my formative years that helped craft who I am as a person. Shape was the word I was looking for.
yeah.
Very, very well said. I don't think any of us could sum it up any better than that. And there, you know, frankly, there really is no good segue from something like this to anything else. But I'm going to do my best. And let's talk about for a little bit something else that's very near and dear to our hearts, and that, of course, is Final Fantasy VII. And of course, we all are playing FF7 Rebirth right now. And of course, we're not going to get into spoilers, but in general. How's it going, guys? Go ahead.
Hold on. I want to start off real quick so that we all kind of gauge each other where we're at.
Sure.
With just sounding off, what chapter number are we all in?
Two.
Chapter four.
At the end of, well, the tail end of two at this point.
Wow. Hey, guys, I'm in chapter nine.
Well, you got it early, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to be fair, I've done that marathoning the last few nights. Like, I've been staying up till 2 or 3 a.m. playing it.
I literally can't do that. Trust me, I easily could, but my God, it is so easy to just get lost in doing all those world intels. And fortunately, next time I play, I'll be able to likely hit chapter 3 because I've finished the world intels and done all the virtual stuff so I can move on.
It's so fun to explore this world at scale, or, you know, at least at, you know, somewhat at scale. It's this is like a world that is like, you know, there's some open worlds that aren't really very fun to explore, that aren't a lot of really interesting activities. That is not true of Rebirth. I'm having such a fun time just exploring every inch of this world.
So my strat is that I do like the exploration of the world, although I've been finding, and maybe it's just because I've been turning a critical eye to the game, I've been finding lots of things that kind of annoy me about Rebirth. Stuff that largely kind of matches John's complaint about Remake. Lots of forced walking segments, like areas where you inexplicably are slowed to just a slow walk. And you can't even run, you know, lots of weird segments like that where it feels like something you should just be able to run to the next point. And they're like, nah, Cloud's going to walk for a bit. They're going to talk a little. Cloud's going to walk as slowly as humanly possible through this section. And you're going to have a conversation that could be had while running across a vast open expanse. But now we'll just and it always bugs me. But and the other one is just the. I don't know if y'all feel this way, but Cloud's face outside of cutscenes is straight up off-putting. It is really hard to look at, like, in the game world.
I've not noticed.
There are some angles I've noticed that. I think, you know, I mean, I have to imagine that's because the scope of Rebirth is so gargantuan compared to Remake that some you know, concessions had to be made, right? And so I know what you're talking about, Steve. I've definitely seen in some lighting situations his face can look a little weird. It doesn't really bother me, but yeah.
The weird thing for me, the weirdest bit, and I imagine there is some, like you said, because the scope is so much larger, I imagine that there had to be some reduction in model detail, especially between the PS5 version of Remake and Rebirth. But there's weird lighting situations where it looks like Cloud doesn't have eyebrows at all.
I know, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Bugs me so much.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The force walking stuff definitely happens, obviously. Like, that is absolutely a thing, and I remember John complaining about that. And, you know, it's obviously Rebirth and Remake are not the only games to have done that. Like, we saw that in Uncharted 4, for example. We see that in The Last of Us. It never really bothered me. Like, I get why it annoys people, but it never really was a thing for me. Like, it never really bugged me. But I get why it's a thing. For some.
Yeah, I will say that, I mean, these are minor complaints in the grand scheme of things. I'm in love with Rebirth so far. I mean, from what I understand, I'm close to, if not at, the halfway point in the game. You know, I'm not going to talk more about any elements of that, but I will say I have a clear favorite chapter, but none of y'all have gotten there yet. It's you're really close to it. You're all really close to it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I will say that the highs in this game are so incredibly high that it's just like, I can't, it's one of those games where I know there's flaws and I can pick out the flaws pretty easily, but there's no chance in hell that they stop me from from being completely wrapped up in this game. You know, I'm still, as more and more new story elements kind of reveal themselves, I just keep wanting to pick at the game to find out, like, what is this, you know? I don't know what level of narrative we want to discuss, but I think we can at least all say that the opening is already a curveball. Like, the first moments of the game are a massive curveball.
Yeah,
that's for damn sure. That was wild. And, you know, I'm sure there are some people watching today who haven't gotten to even start it yet. It is only a week old, so we probably shouldn't even get into that. But yes, suffice to say, the first 5 minutes are already like a huge curveball. And I just, it's one of those games where I find myself, I'm thinking about it when I'm not playing it, and I just want to play it for hours on end. Not because I love existing in this world, but because I'm so desperate to see what happens in the story. But there's so much side content to do that I want to do.
I barely have any story. Like, I'm still absorbed in this game. But Daniel, I already hear, how are you enjoying Chapter 2? Yeah. You like me and you just can't stop doing the side stuff?
I see a map that's clouded, and I'm just like, I need to unveil this map. This is bothering me. So I run around everywhere. There's like little bits of that I need to get to clear out, and I'm just like, I'm that person to try and clear all that out. The last thing I have to do is pretty much just like cross the grasslands with my chocobo. Yep. But there's a lot of stuff to do before that. Why would I ignore all it?
Exactly.
And you see a bunch of other characters. You see a bunch of other characters from the story that are from, like, from Remake, and you want to see what they've been up to and what they're doing. And there's that one quest where you're pretty much going from place to place to place to get this one thing with these bunch of losers, and you're just like, God, just leave me alone already. And it's funny because, like, yeah, it's all side stuff, but I feel like it's just so integral to the experience. It's one of those games where all the side content, I feel like I have to do it because, I mean, it's such a huge world now, and I want it, it's such a different take from Remake, where you're just kind of enclosed in the city of Midgard. Now I can just go anywhere. I want to revel in that. I want to actually, you know, run everywhere with my chocobo and do all this stuff. And so, yeah, I've just been mostly trying to get used to combat with swapping between characters and trying to readjust myself since playing Remake, and also learn the new mechanics as well.
Yeah,
also playing a lot of Queen's Blood too. I love Queen's Blood.
It took me a while, but I actually got pretty good at Queen's Blood. I'm happy to say that I've actually acclimated to Queen's Blood.
I love my card games.
Then Daniel or Derek, I am officially recruiting you to remote play into my game and Queen's Blood it up for me, because I struggle with card games in general, and I've gotten a little bit better. I have started to get better.
You have to put on that pressure on the early on. You have to get those cards early on, and just the quicker you can shut down them able to put down cards, the easier you'll win.
I've learned that.
That is the entire strategy.
Aggressively, you can kind of corner the AI. And it was funny. I was telling myself I'd ignore Queen's Blood, but then one of the very first side quests, you kind of have to play it, and it's for a very specific reason. And if you know me, you know why I had to do it. I was like, ah, damn it. Okay, well, I guess I'm doing Queen's Blood then. But I am getting better at it, and I have learned, like you just said, Derek, that you just have to be super aggressive. So, I'm definitely getting better at it.
Just wait. Queen's Blood gets so much more complicated.
I got a notification. No. Like, apparently there's ways that you can destroy other cards, essentially. I forget the enfeeble them or something. I think the way they put them, like, oh, and they didn't have any of that when they gave me that tip. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm going to have to just keep an eye out and just try to just keep going, but I'm not going to be able to stop. I they gave me this thing that I have all this stuff to collect. I want it all. I need to do it. I did all of Fort Condor, and Fort Condor is way more annoying than this. I enjoy Fort Condor, but it takes a while.
Because Maxon Lee mentioned Queen's Blood is fun, but Fort Condor, I'm not really a fan, LOL. Me neither. And I'm actually right in the middle of a Fort Condor thing right now, and it is...
I have not even done Fort... I'm talking about the Yuffie stuff. I didn't realize it came back. It makes sense that it comes back, but...
Right.
The only thing I'll ask you guys, though, is do you have a preferred party, or are you switching it up quite a bit?
Oh man, I'm philandering with Cloud. I just take Aerith and Tifa with me, and that is I'm just building that relationship meter. I don't know how it all works out in the end, but I know that they've got blue smiley faces above their head, and I'm sure that's the right direction.
I'm swapping between.
I have to point out though. Oh no, I can't. Never mind. I'm not gonna.
Okay.
I can't. I won't say it. Okay. It's part of the relationship thing, but there's a particularly off-putting bit of the relationship game.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. All okay. Right. Looking forward to seeing what that means. I'm switching between Cloud Tifa and Barret and Cloud Tifa and Red 13 so far. I like Aerith in the remake Rebirth project, but I can't stand playing as her. I'm constantly swapping characters.
Dude, have you used her Chrono Shift or Chrono Aegis or whatever it's called? Because dear God, that movie is ridiculous.
I just don't enjoy the way she feels to play.
She lacks impact.
Yeah, I love playing as Tifa or the rushdown style. I love playing as Cloud. Red 13, super fun with how agile he is. I love Barret and his long range attacks, but just Aerith. I can't do it, man.
Red 13 is a killing machine in this game. Like,
yes, he is
so ridiculously brutal. What's that? One of his first abilities he has can merc just about anything.
I think it's the thing that has the beams. Yeah. Surrounding it.
It takes two ATB slots. Stardust Ray, thank you. I was going to say, it's a limit from the old game, it's just
so good.
Insta-kill. Like, I detonated that in a group of enemies, and it just took them all.
It's crazy strong. And I can't wait to see, like, you know, just based on intermission, I love the way Yuffie played. I cannot wait to play her in this game, because I just loved playing her in intermission. So, my big question for me... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I think the only character we have left to play as in this game is probably Cait Sith.
That's the thing, and I'm like, how are they going to make Cait Sith fun to play? I never liked playing Cait Sith.
He's pretty damn fun.
I can't wait to find out. Like, I'm genuinely excited.
I'm not going
to
say anything more than he's actually quite fun to play. And when you finally get him, you get another really cool thing alongside him. It's so good. I literally just got him, so you got a ways to go.
What's your party, Daniel?
Who are you rocking? Yeah.
I do usually switch around with, I switch around playing as Cloud, Tifa, and Aerith in my party. I appreciate the variety in the characters. They do feel so much different from each other, even with, like, Red 13, obviously, just spinning everywhere, his own little tornado, just wrecking everyone, and then Barret just kind of, I don't know, Barret's probably my least favorite. He just kind of sits around and shoots from a distance. I know that's his role, is to just fire from a distance. I probably haven't just played enough as him yet. But, I probably lean mostly between playing as Cloud and Tifa, though. I like my DPS out there.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Tifa's just so fun. Just get up in enemies' faces and just beat them down. I love how her triangle abilities just absolutely eviscerate staggered enemies. Just absolutely destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
She's just so fun. Yeah, but and also, you know, one of the other standout elements of Rebirth is this incredible soundtrack. No surprise, of course, but it seems like every single song in this game has a battle variant of it, and I love the dynamic music, how it just shifts in and out of the battle version of every theme just in real time. The music is insane. And on that note, just today they announced the FF7 Rebirth Orchestra World Tour, and the first show is in LA. The first show
in
LA.
Of course.
Tickets go on sale next week, and you better believe I'll be there. So any other Angelinos in the audience, I will see you on August 10th at the first ever Rebirth Orchestra World Tour. That just means you guys got to come.
I kept getting thrown aback by the soundtrack, because there was like a side quest where I'm just jolly and just gleefully chatting with a side character, and it's like an upbeat theme, and so I'm looking for items around the area, and then battle theme hits, and then it's just a battle theme of that. I'm just like, what's going on? Why'd you didn't have to do, you don't have to go this hard.
It's so, like, good. I know exactly.
I thought I was gonna shift back to the actual, like, main field battle theme, but no, it kept that theme, and everything has a battle theme in this game. It's crazy.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love it.
To answer Squire in the live audience, I popped off popped off when I saw the scene that happens after you finish the Proto Relic quest. I'm like, oh, I am so here for that, yeah, for these things. I got super excited.
That was crazy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's I want to go. Sorry, you know what? We're done. I'm gonna go play right now. We're done. GVG cast over. But no, I
probably should move on since we've been talking a while.
We should. Before we do, Dunkman, who I think is Dizzy Duncan in our YouTube chat, donated 100 bits. Thank you so much. Asking who is seeing Kung Fu Panda 4. I'll see it.
With
I'm
what
not
time?
Sure if I'll see it when it comes out, but I'll see it eventually. Maybe once it comes home. I really like the Kung Fu Panda series, though. Like, they're a lot of fun. The other thing that I think we should talk about really quick, I think we've all played it, is the Princess Peach Showtime demo. I played it earlier today, but Daniel, I want to start with you this time. I think you mentioned you've played it, yeah?
Yeah, I played throughout the whole demo just last night. This is, as I expected when I first saw it, this is going to be an okay game. it's not going to set the world on fire. It's not going to be like the most amazing thing ever, but it's going to be very charming. It's going to be very wholesome in some ways, and I'm going to probably not play it right away. I'll find a way to play it at some point, but I feel like as I play it, it's akin to like Kirby and the Forgotten Land in its own way. Because you're in a 3D space, you're using a character who, I guess it's kind of like Kirby's copy abilities when you change the way that you play, but except it's in a set place, in a set format. But you're like, when you're Sword Fighter Peach, you're pretty much that for like 15 minutes or so, and you have, what, 3 actions or so, and then it's kind of over, and then you move on to the next one to when you're making all the treats. I don't know. It's like... It's gonna be an all right game, middle of the road kind of game for me, but I understand why. I mean, it's a family game. It's meant to be for something that anybody can get into. I can imagine me and my younger sisters playing this together at some point because they really like Peach, especially since they saw the Mario movie, and it's gonna set out what it wants to do. But yeah, I'm glad that Peach is gonna be in like at least in a competent game that people will be able to attach to more so than, I guess, Super Princess Peach when that came out way long ago.
Right. No. Yeah. What about you, Steve? How are you feeling about the show?
Daniel and I are on different pages on this one. But to be fair, I will put out there that I am one of the weirdos who really liked Super Princess Peach. So this reminds me, I played the demo the night that it came out. And I was in love with it. I thought it was a delight. So, one, I want to point out that the animation is incredibly nice. Like, it's not next level games nice, but it's close. It's like up there in terms of how well they animated the the cutscenes with Peach. The other thing that I liked about it is it reminds me of like mid 2000s Nintendo, like where they were just kind of trying weird stuff. And it feels very much like it has that energy of let's make a Peach game and let's just do whatever we want with the character, because they don't have like a built up history of solo Peach games that to do callbacks to. Right. Like Mario, there are things we expect from Mario games. It reminds me very much of like Luigi's Mansion, you know, the way we kind of there's a form to it, but it's not really a well-defined form. So we have just Peach. And they're using all these really creative ideas. The fact that the levels take place within a play, you know, I just really like that. I love the aesthetic of this game. I like that you use what did they call it? Was it sparkle power?
Yeah.
Like when she gets the ribbon and she can, you know, she kind of fixes people's problems by just whipping them with the ribbon real quick, and some characters will light up, or some characters will, you know, regain their resolve. There are absolutely like missable collectibles within the level, like in the baking level.
Like you actually got to do well because I was certainly sucking. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like enemies are flying away with ingredients and you actually have to like jump up and whip them out of the air to get the collectible in that area. And if you miss them, you just miss them and you have to do the level again. And that sounds frustrating, but it's something that I miss from game design, right? Nintendo has been very hand-holdy specifically with collectibles and levels, to where in a lot of their games, it's if you missed it, you totally have the opportunity to go back and get it. And I like the fact that they're like, nope, you missed it. Play through it again. Do better next time. But ultimately, I think that it is a game of highs and lows. I think Sword Fighter Peach was so much fun to play as. She was an absolute blast. Whereas Baker Peach felt a little bit more like you were playing just a series of Mario Party minigames. Yeah. Like, you would have to, oh, decorate the cakes. I was like, this is Mario Party. I'm playing Mario Party now. I don't mind it, but it's definitely like a much slower pace than the sword fighting level. You know, so I like the diversity in the gameplay mechanics. One way in which I agree with Daniel is this is absolutely not like going to set the world on fire. I will be in the minority and loving this. Like, I fully accept that. I'll be like, this game's great. And people will be like, yeah, okay. it's going on the shelf for me, though. Once I played the demo, I was like, I'm buying a physical of this. I'm putting it on the shelf and I will have it for all time, because I did not do that with Super Princess Peach and I regret it. So, yeah, I think it's good. I'm excited. Day one purchase for me, for sure.
Yeah, it's just one of the things about that is, like, I worried at the beginning of this game's identity, because you're going to be playing in so many different play styles, which I guess the game identity can be that you are playing all these different play styles. But I guess that's part of the where, like, the Kirby comparison comes to, is that younger audiences can just play through it and you know, clear the stage and they'll feel satisfied. But then older gamers can go for the 100% completion in certain levels for that, for those tricky things that, yeah, it does feel like, it kind of feels like a game that I would have played on the GameCube, which I also feel about The Forgotten Land. So I guess it has that kind of, like, feel to it, that gamey feel from back then.
Well, I think that actually matches quite well, because, you know, we've discovered that Goodfill is the one behind this, even though Nintendo still refuses to say who. It's just data mining that's revealed that to us. And as soon as I heard that before I played it, and then I started playing, it's like, oh, that makes so much sense. Because to me, this is a follow-up to Kirby's Epic Yarn. And I agree with a lot of you guys, both of you, on a lot of those aesthetics, or what you're sort of coming away from this, because Epic Yarn is easy. You cannot die in Epic Yarn. Granted, you can die in Peach. You have a certain amount of hearts and you can die in this, but there's also somebody you can talk to and, like, here's three extra hearts if you're having trouble. Like, you don't want to, you know, don't worry about that. But it's that, it's the challenge, at least seemingly based on the cake level. Who knows if that's the same way for future action levels like Sword Fighter Peach. It seems like getting 100% is your challenge. Or in Kirby's case, like, yeah, you won't die, but if you want to have all the jewels or all the beads and get the max rank for that Epic Yarn level, then you got to play actually well. So I think that's where I came across on it, where to me, okay, it's not going to, as Daniel said, it's not going to set the world on fire, but it's incredibly charming. And that's where I think it's going to, like, really, like, the people who pick this up and are interested in that vibe are totally going to get what they want out of this game. And
I think that's I'm landing on it.
Peach fans are winning with this game.
Yes, they are.
There is, I definitely agree that this is not going to set the world on fire. However, I also agree that it is absolutely oozing with charm. And Steve, you specifically mentioned the animations, and I noticed that too when I was playing. The animations are so cute and so just absolutely charming, like I said. And there's a lot of love that clearly went into this game. I do worry a little bit about the diversity in gameplay in terms of highs and lows. Like you, Steve, I agree. I really enjoyed Sword Fighter Peach. Patissier Peach, I was like a little bit iffy on. I like the cake segment more than the cookie segment, for sure. So I feel like there's going to be maybe some highs and lows going forward in terms of gameplay styles I clearly prefer over others. But at the same time, it's definitely something I want to experience all the way through. Is it going to pull me away from Rebirth? Absolutely not. This is a game that I am squarely putting aside for after I finish Rebirth. But it is something I want to play, for sure. It's not blowing my mind, but it is really cute and it's fun. And it's something I do want to see all the way through. And the intro reminded me in a good way of Luigi's Mansion 3, the part where you're, like, in the lobby talking all the PCs and... And there's definitely something interesting going on here with this game. And, I mean, Good Feel has, you know, themselves have had their ups and lows for me, or ups and downs. Like, obviously, Yoshi's Woolly World, one of my favorite platformers ever. Crafted World, epic yarn, but I liked it. So this seems like it's going to be closer on the good side of Good Feel for me. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing... I'm curious how much content there will be in the final game. Like, I'm curious how meaty this game is actually going to be. Is it something that, like... I can't quite tell from the demo if it's going to be, like, a 5 to 8 hour game or, like, a 10 to 12 hour one. It doesn't seem like it's going to be too much longer than that, which is refreshing for sure. I'm not asking for it to be an epic. But I'm curious to see just what the scope of this game is going to be like, and I'm curious if you get all the gems, does that unlock, like, new post-game content or, like, another final boss or something like that. So I'm still left with a lot of questions after playing the demo, but I'm definitely into it. And I'm looking forward to it when I get around to it for sure. You can tell the charm is absolutely there. For sure.
I guess. Mm-hmm. One final thing is that it's interesting to hear Peach speak with such a deeper voice. The direction is like different than what we're used to. It's still Samantha Kelly. She's still doing the voice, but they're definitely taking the voices in a unique direction ever since like last year, I guess, starting with Wonder, especially with some of the new voices entirely. But it's just interesting to see.
We got a first-time chat from Kicking Kedlio saying it's sad that Peach has to be relegated to Family Kids game. I'm not so sure that's sad, though, because there's nothing wrong with Family Kids games. I don't know if it's a bad thing to be relegated to. I mean,
this is a perfect intro game for young girls who I've seen a lot of girls be like, I just want to play as Peach. This is their game.
Yeah.
I'm a nearly 40-year-old man. It doesn't need to appeal to me. I'm not the target audience.
The thing I find interesting about that, though, is what do we think Mario games are? There's not a single Mario game that I would classify as not family friendly. That's the point. Like, it would be one thing if it was like a Zelda game, right? Where the subject matter is a bit darker, and then Zelda gets her own spinoff that's like this Princess Peach title. Yeah, I could understand, but you know, Mario has always been nothing but family friendly.
Exactly. Yeah, that's well said. That's what I was going to say. So, and thank you for that first-time chat, by the way, King Kedley. I really appreciate that. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our patron topics for the week. As a reminder, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/GVGaming, and if you support us at the producer tier or above, you can suggest topics for us to discuss, just like the ones we're about to talk about right now. And Daniel, why don't you get us started, man?
Sure. This one comes from A Drink to the Past, who's asking, lots of games give characters multiple weapon options that never get talked about because there's one iconic weapon everyone remembers. For example, Cloud's Hard Edge in Final Fantasy VII is overshadowed by the Buster Sword, and nobody talks about how rad the Razor Sword in Majora's Mask is because it's the worst upgraded weapon from a mechanical standpoint. What are your favorite non-iconic weapons that nobody is talking about? Yeah, it's funny because I feel like the Razor Sword is spoken about. Like, it is recognized as the cooler sword because it's in official art. It's pretty much just a Kokiri sword but with some notches in it, which is okay. But I like the Gilded Sword more than the Razor Sword. I love the gold design in it, the diamonds that are inside of it. The sheath has, like, a gold tint to it as well. That one's honestly one of my favorite swords in Zelda. And then even beyond that, the Great Fairy Sword, the most overpowered sword in that game, it's bigger than Link. The Great Fairy Sword is bigger than he is with a two-handed blade. And it's just so cool. It's all like rainbowy. It's got roses, black roses etched into it. It looks so cool. I still have my Great Fairy knife from the Legends Cookbook. Thank you all for
that. Oh, yeah.
Another one? Oh, gosh.
This is hard.
There were like, there's a lot of Keyblade designs that I really like. I think I really like the Lionheart Keyblade, the one that's modeled after Squall. It's pretty much it's like a gun blade. It's a gun keyblade essentially. It's a meshing of both of them. I really love the Final Fantasy inspired ones, like I guess it's like Fatal End, one of those the one that looks like the Buster Blade, at least in the Advent Children's Star, because it has some wrappings around the key. Those ones were really cool. I enjoy any of the ones that are taken after like Final Fantasy, those kind of blades.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yeah, it's hard to, like, I try to keep those equipped as long as I can, just because, like, they do show up in cutscenes and whatnot. And so, yeah, those are the ones I kind of think about the most, those kinds. But what are ones that you like?
Ooh.
Man, with Zelda, it's anything that's not the Master Sword, right? Ocarina of Time, I always liked the big Goron sword just because it was huge. Also the Fierce Deity sword is one of my favorite ones.
Oh yeah, no one ever talks about the double helix blade.
Yeah.
Oh right.
All the Majora's Mask swords that aren't the original ones are so cool.
Right? Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy, I would say for Final Fantasy VII, since we've been talking about that, I was a big fan of the Ultima Blade in that game. Like, I mean, it is the best sword Cloud can get in the game, but I always thought the design was really, really cool.
It's cool that the look changes on your HP. Like, it actually changes the way it looks depending on like how bright or how dim it is, but depending on how much HP you have. I think that's really cool, too. Yeah. It's unique.
That happens with FF6's Illumina weapon as well. Same thing.
Yeah.
It's
Let's see. To make it as Steve as possible and answer, in PSO, all the official art only ever showed you with like the worst weapon in the game, like the starting saber. And there was this rare weapon you could get. You had to get the final boss's DNA and a super rare sword and then combine them to make a weapon called Olga Flow or Dark Flow. Sorry. You had to kill Olga Flow to get its DNA, combine it with Flow and Sword to make Dark Flow. And its special ability was that if you were low on HP, it would just generate an explosion that killed everything in the room. That's probably my favorite sword in all of Phantasy Star out of thousands of them. And there's not a single piece of official art with that sword in it.
Of course.
Kind of funny, like, counter to that, a game like Genshin Impact, there's so many weapon designs in there from 1 stars to 5-star weapons. And in every cutscene, they use the stupid, like, dull blade, like the 1-star, the most basic sword ever for your main character who's, like, taking on godly beings from beyond. And they're using the lamest looking sword in the whole game to do so. There's so many fantastical looking designs in that. And it just bothers me.
That's a scourge on MMOs. They're like, we don't know what they'll have, so just give them the starter weapon in every cutscene.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Man.
For mine, I was trying to think, and I almost wanted to say the Chrysagrim from Symphony of the Night for Alucard. But I feel like that does get represented a lot. People know that is the best weapon in the game for him, but even though he isn't officially shown with it, he's usually given the Alucard sword. Honestly, where my mind went to immediately was, I love Zidane's dual bladed weapons in, Final Fantasy IX. I think they are so much cooler than his daggers. And as soon as I got those, I'm like, nope, not going back to dagger. These things are too cool. I like a double bladed, basically Darth Maul type sword. Yeah, I want that.
Dude, I'm right there with you. In fact, Surge uses those in Chrono Cross as well. And I was always a big fan. And in that game, they're called Swallows. I don't know if that's actually
I that's where I first heard it. So I saw Zidane with him like, yes, that.
Yeah, they're I totally hear you. You mentioned Keyblades, Daniel, and one that I feel is often overlooked, and this is no surprise because I love my ice weapons, is the Diamond Dust Keyblade, which is also, of course, based on Final Fantasy as well, from Kingdom Hearts 3. I used Diamond Dust a lot in Kingdom Hearts 3 just because I love the way it looks. And Steve, you mentioned FF7, and I actually thought you were going to say this instead of what you said, and the ultimate weapon's great, but I was going to say the nail bat always made me laugh. Literally just regular ass bat with nails coming out of it, and I always thought that was a really funny weapon. It's just like, it's so basic but at the same time kind of perfect, and it has like no materia growth, I think, but it's that just makes it funnier. So I've always liked the nail bat. But on that note, to make it as ash an answer as possible, I've been like mentally scanning through all the overlooked weapons in Mega Man, and I landed on Mega Man 7, which is what I think it's an overlooked Mega Man game in general. I think it's way better than people give it credit for. And there's a particular weapon in that game called the Noise Crush, which is really cool because you get it from Shade Man, and you can fire a sound wave and let it bounce off the wall and hit Mega Man again, and it charges him up, which he can then fire a stronger sound wave. And I can't think of other weapons in Mega Man that kind of have that wall reflective mechanic. And so it's kind of cool just like jumping and shooting through stages, shooting noise crushes, having a Mega Man reabsorb them, and then shooting out more powerful sound waves. I always thought that was a cool idea for a weapon that kind of gets overlooked a lot. So noise crush is going to be the very ash answer for this question. Boltmouse, you like Mega Man 7? Hell yeah. No, Mega Man 7 gang, let's unite. Really quick before we move on, C. Turlak shared, well, 45 bits just now, but also more bits earlier, and I'm sorry we did miss them. Please accept our apologies. Saying, you're sharing your message again. Hey, GVG crew, longtime watcher and patron, just wanted to show my appreciation to you guys because I was just accepted to a Doctorate of Music program, and listening to you guys has always helped me when I was in the trenches of audition prep. Cheers. Well, cheers to you. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for watching over here on Twitch. We really appreciate you making the jump over to the Twitch channel. But yeah, congratulations, and sorry we missed your original message, but thank you so much for the bits and for letting us know that awesome achievement. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Derek, your turn, man.
Mine comes from Brandon Digwood, who says, I love all the games we talk about here, but I would love to hear about some books you like if you're willing to share. Since I'm a teen librarian, I can happily say I love anime and manga, and I'm really digging Derek's One Piece at a Time podcast with Brandon Bovia. Thank you so much for listening. I love One Piece and My Hero Academia, and my favorite written novel of the past few years has been the fantasy teen title Year of the Reaper by Makiya Lucier. What are some of the books you like? Well, I am not as well read as I used to be. I used to read all the time. More often than not, right now I read the Final Fantasy XIV lore books. They're called Encyclopedia Eorzea, where you just get a lot of extra details and just show how well put together that world is. That's just been a lot of fun to read, but obviously it's not a traditional novel in any sense of the word. I also liked Bitmap Books, where they went over just a huge thick thing of like, here's basically every RPG, a JRPG. Go learn about at least a little bit of them. And it's, I haven't even finished that yet, but it's massive. There's so much that it covers, and it can be a little opinionated at times, I feel. Rather than just, I feel like for that type of sort of thing, it's just give me the facts, but it's like, they offer a little bit too much of their own opinions, I think, sometimes, but I still very much enjoy it and want to read more of it. As far as anything else, I was always a big fan of reading, you know, Stephen King's Dark Tower series. I read Game of Thrones. Book 6 is never coming out. And your typical sort of fantasy fare is what I find myself gravitating towards. I've never read Terry Pratchett, though. So if I ever get a chance to read traditional, get back to just reading a regular book, I do want to start reading his Discworld series. That's next to my sort of radar.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I fully admit to not being a bookworm whatsoever. I never have been, probably never will be. Most of what I read is like, news articles, but then of course like manga as well. And I wish I had more time to read more manga and comics because I love them. But there's only so much free time to go around. And I fully admit when I have free time, it typically goes to games. So I've never been much of a bookworm. But that said, I'd read a ton of manga growing up. I know Steve will totally hear me on this one. I read every bit of Ranma 1/2 that I could, which was eventually the entire series. I read all of Ranma 1/2. I have a particular soft spot for Love Hina that I read in my adolescence. I loved that manga. I read all the Rockman EXE manga, back in the day. And I also have a specific soft spot for art books, as Derek was mentioning, because it's pretty well known that I used to be Udon's senior editor, and I worked on a bunch of art books while I worked for them. And so I have a giant collection of video game and anime art books, both ones that I worked on and ones that I didn't, just because I love art books. So and I love reading behind the scenes, like commentary and stuff about how certain character designs and stuff came to be. And actually, shout out to one of our Fight a Partner patrons, Amajish, with whom I've been going through the current run of the TMNT comics as like for our monthly Fight a Partner sessions. And they've I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan, but I'm so behind on the comics because I don't really have time to read comics. And so they've been taking me through the current run of TMNT comics, and they're amazing. And I've had so much fun reading those with the Magish. So yeah, I'm a big comics and manga guy, but I've just never been much of a bookworm myself. Guilty as charged. What about you, Daniel?
All right.
Yeah, there's a... I don't really I consume as much literature as I wish I would. And traditionally within books, all the literature I consume are within my games, whether it's like a visual novel or just something that's not like, you know, read out to me with voice acting. That's not an actual answer or anything. I guess the most recent thing I looked at was ever since Persona 3 was out, I looked at the official comics that were throughout. There's some pages where they do a lot of different translations, like fan translations of those comics, and there's a lot. There's some from the original Persona 3, there's one from Fest, there's the ones I was reading most recently was Persona 3 Portable's comic anthology, which specifically takes Kotone as the main character and has her just the most chaotic bundle of energy and force of nature in those comics that I wish we would see more often in the game itself. Like the main character, Makoto Yuki, the main guy, he's like the complete opposite. He's really quiet, he's really just chill and just kind of takes things as they are. And then there's Kotone, who just bounces off the wall, and it's just chaos in a fun way. And that's what I wish we had more of. But, you know, that's like the most reading, I guess I can say, I've done in a long time. So not much else beyond that. I'm sorry. That's just not much more that I can say I've read in the past.
Well, sounds like it's my turn. yeah. I'm gonna sound old and or boring as fuck. I read lots of biographies. So I've read recently Obama's biography. I read Walter Isaacson's books on both Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, which I regret. obviously, I read The Impact of Iwata. I read that book. Well, not biographical, kind of biographical in nature. I also really am a big fan of Jason Schreier's Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, Blake Harris's Console Wars. I love reading historical books about the games industry because, you know, it's weird to think, but like we are the games industry now, right? Like we're part of it. But in the 90s, like it was something that I desperately wanted to know more about. And if you think the games industry of the here and now is secretive, it doesn't have anything on what it was like in the 80s and 90s, where these guys treated each other like they would murder each other if they were in the same room. So it's really cool to read that kind of behind the curtain reporting on what it was like back in the 80s and 90s. You know, when we did the Ocarina of Time 25th anniversary video, I was lucky enough to get Per Schneider to talk to us about it, who reviewed Ocarina of Time and just the crazy crap Nintendo put reviewers through back then. Hearing him talk about how they literally sent people with like the game chained to their fucking suitcase, like, and they just had to be there with you and watch you play it and then take it away when you were done. I'm like, Nintendo gets a lot of flack for being over the top now, but they were definitely actually over the top like way back when. So I mean, I can't recommend those books enough, but those would be my picks. Like, just, you know, I like to read about famous people, and I like to read about old-timey game stuff that, you know, is almost lost knowledge at this point.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's a great, yeah. I do have a couple of like older books about the game industry that are a lot of fun. I have one called Game Over, I think, that was really good. And yeah, I love those books as well. Definitely. Well, speaking of you, Steve, you're the man of the hour. It is your turn for your topic, my friend.
Yeah, so we kind of jumped in on this for the first bit of the show, but I wanted to devote a bit at the back end to it. This is from Hendrix Trog, who wrote, with the passing of Akira Toriyama this week, what is your favorite memory associated with his works, whether in manga, TV, film, etc.? And I'm going to keep this brief because we talked a lot about Toriyama and we all have very complicated feelings about the man and his legacy. But I would say the thing that my favorite memory is when I first heard about Dragon Ball Super. just the, you know, I remember because Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z were kind of abstract as an American kid. Like, it became popular in a time where the internet was in its infancy. So it wasn't like we had a lot of resources to keep up with what was going on with Dragon Ball. And it ended without me ever knowing it was over. I was still making my way through it, you know, so, but it had been over for years by the time I realized it was over. And then by the time, you know, I was like, oh, there's Dragon Ball GT. And it took me forever to find out Toriyama wasn't really doing GT. And so, you know, obviously with the internet catching up and information becoming freely available, I realized that Dragon Ball had been technically out of my life for a long time. And then, you know, what, 20 years later, Toriyama starts doing like little shorts, like, and I was like, oh my God, the man is returning to Dragon Ball. And then we get news that there's going to be Dragon Ball Super, like a full on new series by Toriyama. And I remember just being over the moon excited about the fact that the man was coming back to make more like regular Dragon Ball, you know, on a consistent schedule. And that was, I remember calling my brother and being like, oh my God, Dragon Ball is back, baby. You know, like obviously we'd gotten Battle of Gods and we knew Resurrection F was on the way, but just knowing there was a whole series coming was really exciting. And I think that'll always be one of my favorite things. It gives me hope that someday maybe Kishimoto will return to Naruto proper instead of Boruto. But yeah, I would say that's my favorite one, hands down. Just that hype moment where I realized Toriyama was going to be writing new Dragon Ball stuff and that I would get to follow it like in real time as it happened.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I'll keep this brief. I don't even need to go into it. I already did earlier. Two words, Chrono Trigger. Everything about Chrono Trigger is everything is that is most important to me in terms of, I mean, yeah. So much of what he did means a lot to me, including Dragon Ball, but Chrono Trigger is just such a massive part of my life. That's got to be it.
I'll keep mine brief as well, because, you know, there's a lot of moments from across Dragon Ball that are just amazing. But the first one I felt like as part of a community was when I went and saw Battle of Gods in theaters, and just seeing that with a whole group of people excited for new Dragon Ball material, that was something special. So
nice.
And mine's pretty brief as well. There was a time that was, it was a rough patch in life where my mom was living somewhere else now. My dad wasn't showing up at home very often. So my belongings at home were pretty much divided in half between the old place and the other place, because I was pretty much just commuting between both of them. And this is while I was in college, in community college. So there was a lot of things I had to juggle with during that time. But that's when I was really starting to get involved with Dragon Quest VIII. And so I distinctly remember after college, I would go to my dad's house, which was just a very empty house at this point, depressingly so. But I had Dragon Quest over there, and my PS2 was just over there. So I wasn't moving that back and forth. I just left it there. So I would go over there. I'd play Dragon Quest VIII in my lonesome for those couple of hours. It kept me company for those hours that I was there. And that's pretty much all I went over there to do and to play, is I went there to play Dragon Quest VIII. And then I would go to my mom's other place after that, because I had different consoles there. I had to split everything in half. It was really annoying, and it's not an ideal way to live. But that game kept me company for a very long time, and Akira Toriyama is the reason for that, because of that fantastical world that he created. The world map theme is something that is always going to stay with me, and I'm very thankful that that exact same world map theme is in Dragon Quest XI. And I never changed it. It honestly sounds better and more fitting in 11 in 11S than it did in than the actual like world map theme, because it's just so good. And it was kind of makes me teary eyed, because when I was playing 11, it brought me back to those days, because of it swells up the music and then it does the and then it when it hits that part, it's just like it's so powerful and it evokes a lot of emotions. And yeah, that's something that I think his works kind of helped me get through a rough time in my life because of that, and I'm very thankful for him for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that question, that very topical question, Hendrix Trog. Before we move on, I should mention that Shulchen donated 100 bits. Thank you so much, saying, it's so convenient to catch GVGcast live at 6 p.m. Well, it's 5 p.m. for me, but I'll take you at your word. But yes, thank you so much, Shulchen. And Duncan, Dunkman95 with 100 bits asking, anyone get my messages? Yes, in fact. That's why I read out your Kung Fu Panda 4 message earlier about if we're going to see it or not. So thank you so much for that. All right, speaking of getting through tough times, my topic this week comes from Vedran, asking, if you ever feel like you're going through a rough time, what game do you choose to play to help perk you up, be it through vibes, gameplay, anything? And I have a feeling Steve is going to vibe with my answer quite a bit here, and my answer to this is Sega, especially old school Sega. When I'm having a rough time, when I'm feeling down, there are very few things I like doing more than turning down the lights, putting my headphones on, and playing a Sonic game, Knights, Outrun, Jet Set Radio, just old school Sonic, old school Sega vibes. Nothing really, makes me feel better, faster video game wise than just losing myself in a Sonic game or Knights or Outrun. There's just something about that vibe of Sega that really just makes me feel good. And I could play through Sonic Mania or Sonic 3 and Knuckles or Knights endlessly with the lights down, headphones on, and I'm always going to be feeling better after I'm done than I was before I started. And that is my answer. Just Sega. That is the answer to this question. What about
that
you
is,
guys?
That is a perfect answer. That is
right?
Absolutely
so
a perfect answer. I'm trying to remember the specific song. I think it's Last Wave from Outrun that is like my bad mood song. I'm trying to I'm 95%. I'm literally listening.
I think
Last Wave.
Yes.
Google Outrun Last Wave. You've heard it. Every single person watching this has heard that song in a YouTube short or a TikTok, and you don't know you've heard it yet. But I guarantee you have. And it is bar none one of my favorite video game music tracks of all time. It calms me right the hell down whenever I'm pissed off. In fact, I've used it in a couple GVG videos, and y'all didn't know you heard it. That is one of my go-tos. I agree that that old school Sega is it for me because I grew up with the Master System. So you could pretty much throw in Hang On, Safari Hunt, Space Harrier, Afterburner. Those games, they all kind of take me back. In fact, I recently copied my whole Master System collection onto an SD card using my Analog Mega SG. And now I just have them as like a Master System jukebox, so I can just play them whenever I want. And I've abused that since I got that installed in the studio. I play Master System way more than I ever thought I would.
Nice.
Very cool. For me, I it kind of just whatever I don't really have like a go-to that I feel like I need to start it up because I just playing a game in general sort of does the trick as long as it's relatively good. I mean, there are others that may put a bigger smile on my face than some. Like I always remember how Dragon Quest XI at the time was able to just put an immediate smile on my face just playing through that game. Anytime I went to it, it's just like immediate mood improvement. But I don't go back to Dragon Quest XI just to feel a better mood. I guess something closer to that would be Theater Rhythm. Just because, you're listening to good music at the time, but I don't have anything super specific, I guess. That I'm just like, I need to be in a better mood. I'm going to put this thing on.
That's a good one, though. Rhythm games are a big one for me, too. Yeah, that's a fast, like the highway to feeling good vibes, for sure.
That's kind of what I expected Ash to say in the first place, was some kind of rhythm game.
Yeah.
Who I can't play any game that's even remotly competitive when I'm in a bad mood. At that point, Street Fighter can't do it. Splatoon can't do it. Mario Kart can't. I need something low impact and chill.
Yeah, I don't. That's the thing. Like for me either, I don't think I have a specific game that I can think of that I just go through. I'll just go through whatever game I'm currently playing right now to get away from whatever's bothering me or whatever bad mood that I'm in. I guess the closest one would probably be Genshin Impact, because that's the one I consistently go back to over and over again. Just exploring the world is very peaceful. It's very tranquil, and you can choose to either explore or go do like more competitive stuff. I guess, quote unquote competitive, but like more grindy things instead. It's just a way to vibe out with that in particular. So yeah, I mean, mostly it's just like I don't have a genre that I really gravitate towards most for that sort of thing, to be honest. Maybe Smash is the closest thing otherwise, just to play in some capacity. I'll play Ultimate in whatever mood I'm in. Maybe it'll drive me to be better, who knows. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Ooh, I can't play Ultimate when I'm like, I'm not, at least not competitively. I can play Smash against a CPU or whatever, but I can't compete in Smash when I'm in a bad mood, because I get too salty. I can't do it.
I get salty and my gameplay is that much worse. Like I'm so much, I mean, not with Smash, for me it's Street Fighter, but when I'm salty and I'm playing Street Fighter, I end up getting just completely wrecked.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those questions, everybody. Thank you for that question, Vedran. Really appreciate that. Once again, those were our patron topics for the week. And if you go to our Patreon, patreon.com/GVGaming, and support us at the producer tier or above, you can suggest topics for us to discuss each week, just like the ones we just did. And before we head out to our patron-exclusive post-show, we got a couple of hundred bits from Dunkman95, first asking, what did you think of the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer? Loved it. 10 out of 10.
Yep.
No notes. Looking forward to it so much. Cannot wait for that movie. And then asking probably a better question for you, Steve, if you've played him, is Peacemaker fun and broken? Of course, talking about Mortal Kombat 1.
So I have not played Peacemaker, which is as surprising to me as it might be to some of you out there. I've just been head down into Rebirth. And when I'm not playing Rebirth, I've been playing Helldivers. My PS5 is just eating up all my time. Helldivers is I'm gonna make a video on why Helldivers works, because I say it every week, every time I talk about Helldivers. The more I talk about it out loud, the worse it sounds. Like, it sounds like a bad game, like you shouldn't like it. So I think I want to make a video talking about why I like it, and maybe do more of a critical analysis of why it works while sounding like a game that nobody should enjoy. But yeah, those two games have just taken over my gaming life in its entirety right now. So I've not touched MK1 in a bit, even though I truly want to play as Peacemaker. It's just, I'll log in, I'll do the fatalities, I'll be like, neat, and then I'll just go back to playing other stuff. So I'm just gonna save it for when I've rolled credits on Rebirth, and then I'll go and check out Peacemaker and MK1. It just hasn't been high enough on the priority list.
For sure. Well, thank you for those bits, Duncan. And thank all of you for joining us for episode 95 of the GVG Cast. You know, we love doing this show with you every week, whether it's what used to be back on YouTube, now it's on Twitch. We really appreciate each and every one of you who spend part of your Friday evening with us. As always, we have to give a special shout out to all of our patrons at the producer tier and above for helping to make this show and everything we do happen every week, because we could not do it without you. So thank you so very much. And as always, we have to give an extra special shout out to all of our patrons at the executive producer tier and above. And those fine, amazing, incredible folks include Brandon Bovia, Cutie Caitlin, Fangs, Z Patty, Sky Blue Flames, Eastman 23, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Logan Daniel, The D-Pad, Blake, Joy Content, Angel Martinez, Vedran, Joshua Hunter, Benny Yao, Azran127, Black King, Joseph Rutkin, Geeky Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Wataniac, TopDog23100, Young Ben Kenobi, Andrew Medeiros, Darchi, Ikaro, Esax08, Michael McCaw, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber CPHT, Too Much Spaghetti, Bane400, Ascaron809, Ryaner, The Game Orb, Super Gamer Dude 101, Ravelox, Rosa Pardo Bowling,
Hi Mom,
Darksteel01, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Cystic Warrior 29, Super Dank Awesome Unicorn Guy, Derek, Colin, Blaystar 25, Twilord, Mumbling Yeti, Cameron Sharp, Keel, Hustlebun, Noah Fitterer, Calvin Atkinson, Brainchild, The Entire State of Wisconsin, Jim Wakelin, Zlaker, Andy Mine P, Aramis Baramis, Kyle the Monarch, Lord Metarex, Blaze Collard, Eric, Cat EV Person 5, Peyton Thiel, Mega Beatman True Blue Reviews, Ryan Hanley, Somnia, The Game Jamie, Zombie Joe, and last but certainly not least, Marathon Max. Wow, thank you all so very much for your incredible generosity and for being here with us on episode 95 of the GVG Cast. We are off to our patron-exclusive post-show, but we will see you back here right next week on Friday for episode 96. Until then, good night and good vibes. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
We meet again.